The interviews and discussions on this podcast are opinions only and not financial or investment advice. Listeners should obtain independent advice based on their own circumstances before making any financial decisions. Hello there, I'm your host Peter Strachan. Welcome to Stockhead's Rock Yarn. As we hurtle toward a world where cars will no longer be considered as internal combustion engine, but will be electric by choice for safety, for ease of use and for cost of ownership, I'm sure that Stockhead subscribers are keen to keep up with technical and commercial developments. To bring us up to date with these new opportunities, we are delighted to welcome back the Managing Director of Impact Energy Consultancy, Peter Petrovsky. And subscribers can search for Pete on the Stockhead website for past appearances. Peter is active on the committee of the Tesla Owners Club of WA and runs a business implementing microgrids and incorporating rebuildable or renewable energy. Welcome, Pete. Peter, Australia's luxury car tax, do you think that's outlived its purpose in supporting local industry, and has it in fact become now a tax on innovation?
Hi, Peter. Thank you very much for having me back. Yes, absolutely. It definitely has. So the luxury car tax was implemented over 20 years ago. It's now a redundant tax because it was put in place to protect the Falcon and the Commodore. We no longer produce those cars in Australia. In fact, we don't produce any cars in Australia anymore. What it's become now is effectively a tax, exactly as you said, a tax on innovation, a tax on safety, and a tax on electric vehicles. To give you an example, the top of the range Tesla Model S with all the fruit attracts about $56,000 in taxes, $39,000 of which is the luxury car tax. That exact same vehicle in the US was getting a $7,000 incentive or subsidy. That looks like it's going to go to $10,000 US now, so roughly about $13,000. So that's a $70,000 difference just in the tax on that exact same vehicle, buying that in Australia versus the US. It's just absolutely crazy. And it's absolutely crazy that we're incentivizing and subsidizing fossil fuels to a tune of $47 billion a year in Australia. That actually, if you divide that by, because it's the taxpayers that, you know, that money comes from taxpayers' pockets. If you divide that by the number of taxpayers in Australia, that works out to about $3,200 per taxpayer per year. So that means over a 10-year period, a two taxpayer family would have paid taxes to the tune of $64,000. All of that money would have gone to coal, gas, and oil. Now, interestingly, the Model 3 starts at $62,000 on road in Canberra and $66,403 on road in WA. So the mean or the average there is $64,000. So, you know, the average family has already paid for a Model 3 Standard Range Plus.
There's plenty of room for reform there at the federal level to incentivize this type of technology. It's clean technology then, Pete, there's no doubt. So, I mean, the statistics are a little bit clouded for the number of vehicles actually being sold, electric vehicles being sold in Australia, but how are sales moving in Australia and globally?
There's a very big difference between Australia and globally. So in Australia, we I think about 1.5% of the market share of all new cars sold is are EVs, and that includes plug-in hybrids, which is that's a minuscule amount. Compare that to Norway. You know, in 2020, 83% of new cars sold in Norway were either plug-in hybrids, other hybrids, or EVs, pure EVs. The latest figures from Norway in August, so petrol cars accounted for less than 4%, diesel cars accounted for less than 4%. Everything else, so 92% of all cars sold were either electrics or hybrids. I mean, that's a huge discrepancy. But, you know, Norway, 10 years ago, Norway's statistics were roughly around where Australia is today. So, but, you know, we didn't have, you know, didn't have charging stations, didn't have the cars, didn't have the range 10 years ago.
The technology's moved ahead rapidly, hasn't it, Pete?
Absolutely. All we need is the right policy settings, and we could make this shift in, 5 to 7 years.
So, look, do you think the major auto marques are ready to market these electric vehicles in globally? And I mean, they're all gearing up to do it, but will their business models, which is sort of revolves around the servicing and the agencies and so forth, will that be sustainable? I mean, Tesla, you could just buy it on the web. You don't go down to your local car yard and buy one.
Yes, it's a very different business model. You could argue that, the idea is to look at Tesla, if you're looking at it as a company on the stock market, as more than just a car maker. But in fact, you could argue that Tesla is the only car maker out there, the only real car maker, because the others are more, they're more assemblers of parts rather than being, so Tesla makes its own seats, they make their own radio system, they make their own software, the AI is all theirs. So, they don't have a dealership network, they sell directly. So it's a very different model, which means that, the cars are profitable in their own right. They don't rely on service centers, they don't rely on anything else. They don't to make the cars profitable. Yeah. Whereas some of the legacy autos, exactly as you said, so they're relying on servicing, they're relying on all the add-ons that a dealer puts on after the car is sold, and they rely on selling parts. So
yeah, General Electric in the States used to make more money, or General Motors, in the States used to make more money with their insurance offering than they did making cars.
Exactly. And so if you have that sort of a model, you're sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place because, yes, the whole world is moving towards electric. Many jurisdictions, most jurisdictions are mandating it. So, you have to move to electric, but every electric car that you sell, maybe at the expense of your internal combustion engine car. Internal combustion engine cars that they sell, the margins are wafer thin, and some will, in some instances, they're selling them at a loss. The problem is the electric cars that they're selling are often at an even bigger loss. You're cutting your lunch, your only profitable means of profitability, and you're replacing it with a vehicle that is losing even more money. So, it's a very hard place to be in for some of these.
Yeah. So, Pete, just a couple of nitty gritties. I mean, we know that most people sort of travel less than 30 kilometres a day in a automobile. So, say your average commute was like 40 kilometres in a day. How much charge would you require to do that 40 kilometres, and how long would it take to charge, to put that charge in from your home plug or from a supercharging station?
Yes, good question. So, look, the average Australian drives between 36 to 40 kilometres a day, call it 38 kilometres a day. So that's a good place to start. In terms of how much energy that requires, it's roughly, depending on the car, but anywhere from about 7 to about 10 kilowatt hours or units of electricity. To do that 40 kilometres. In terms of charging, that depends on the charger. So the Tesla superchargers, they charge at a rate of 250 kilowatts. The cars, the Tesla Model 3 takes a 250 kilowatt charge. So, it's a couple of minutes. But that's DC charging, which bypasses the inverter in the car and goes directly to the battery. At-home chargers are mainly AC chargers using the inverter in the car. And so that will, that could take half an hour. When I say it takes half an hour, it's very different to refilling a car with fuel because you don't have to stand there with your hand on the bowser or with your hand on the charger. You can go and do whatever you wish. So it really only takes about 3 seconds to charge. It takes a second to plug in and 2 seconds to unplug. But the more important point to make here and to provide a bit of context is the charging time, the public has already voted on charging time. EV owners have voted on charging time and they've voted overwhelmingly towards it not being an important metric. So So Tesla in 2013 developed a battery swapping technology. And in fact, they had a station in California between Los Angeles and San Francisco. And they would swap batteries in 90 seconds. Now, the fastest way to refuel a car in those days was about 38 liters per minute, or about 10 gallons per minute. Now, so it would take about 4 minutes to refuel a petrol car, but 90 seconds to swap out a battery. So you could swap out 2.5 batteries in the time it took to refuel one car. But people never used the swapping station because they just figured, well, why would I go out of home, or why would I get off my route to go and swap my battery, or to go and refill a car, if I can just charge it at home? So, yeah. You know, 75 to 85% of people charge their EVs at home because it's so convenient. It takes 1 second. And, you know, I don't go out to charge. I charge when I'm out, and I charge at home. It's a very different dynamic.
Tesla's technology, it's a rapidly evolving company with strong focus on artificial intelligence. They're working all the time on battery efficiency, technology, and range. I mean, these cars have gone from sort of 150 kilometers to 700 kilometers of range. What are the major developments that you're seeing there in the electric vehicle area?
Look, Tesla is continuing to push ahead and, you know, Elon Musk has mentioned a number of times when asked what Tesla's ultimate moat is going to be, what its actually, that's probably not a good word to use, but what its competitive advantage is going to be in the future. And he's mentioned mass production. He's mentioned that, you know, to make the machine that makes the machine is incredibly difficult. He's also mentioned the pace of innovation. You know, just recently, Tesla held its AI Day, AI standing for artificial intelligence. It was quite incredible to see the technology behind the self-driving neural nets that they're implementing, and the computer. It's just mind-boggling. You know, we're talking, you know, in pentaflops. So Tesla already has what is arguably the fifth largest computer to train its neural net. It's now building a computer that is going to be by far the fastest in the world. So they've got incredible expertise in not just software but hardware, but also in actuators, in power electronics, in batteries, in battery management systems, and so on. So perhaps in retrospect, it's no surprise, but I don't know anyone that predicted the fact that they would launch what they call their Tesla bot, which is a humanoid robot. They're looking at having a prototype ready by next year. So this is a bipedal humanoid that has, you know, at this stage, 2 feet and, you know, 10 fingers. And the idea is, so Elon during the presentation mentioned that, you know, at some point this thing will be able to grab a grocery list and go and get your shopping. You know, you'll be able to tell it to grab that wrench and, you know, tighten that bolt over there. And so it's generalized intelligence. And the way they explained it is effectively they're already doing that with their self-driving cars. Elon mentioned that the AI in the self-driving cars is then, and then they're not, by the way, they're not completely self-driving at this point. They've got the capability, the hardware capability. They're just iterating on the software. But the software is already there. It's a semi-sentient intelligence, effectively, that's driving this car. So the AI is the brain and the car is the body.
Yeah, he's saying that effectively Tesla's a robotics company. You could look at Tesla as not as an automobile company, but as a robotics company.
Absolutely. And so the idea is that you just take the brain and you put it into another body, you know, and which is a humanoid. So you're just changing the form factor. But, you know, it's advances and it's a lead in software, in, like I said, actuators, power electronics, etc. It makes this for a natural. I mean, when you think about the total addressable market of these, the TAM, it's quite incredible because, you know, if you take this to the nth degree, you're potentially replacing all of, you know, human labor. And, you know, so that brings into, you know, so that brings the idea of, you know, universal income, you know, general universal income, et cetera. So, and brings all that.
Yeah, it's definitely on the way. And people, I think the listener would have seen those dancing robots, the Boston Dynamic technology, where robots are doing somersaults and walking up difficult paths and jumping up on boxes and so forth. So this is the sort of technology that's coming, and it reminds me of that movie I, Robot. So I think that's coming our way. It might be, you know, a few decades down the track, but it's sort of developing. Now, if we look at these two different problems, we've got the electric vehicles with the charge that they pick up, and we've got during the day more and more sort of weather-dependent power coming onto the market with wind and solar photovoltaics. What part do you see that the batteries of these electric vehicles might play in actually harvesting some of that power when it's, you know, not needed?
Look, a very important role, in fact, a crucial role. So, look, every grid has different dynamics. So in Las Vegas, the peak is at midnight. In the UK, it's during the first ad break, during Neighbours, when everyone boils a cup of tea. in Western Australia, where I live, the biggest load on the network here is air conditioning, particularly between the months of December and March. So, and it's usually in the afternoon. So when the air conditioners are still left on in the offices, but people start coming home and turning their air cons on at home, you start getting that overlap. So, you know, that peak has been moving to later and later in the day throughout the years as solar has come on. But solar has introduced another problem in that, so our grid here in Western Australia, there's some debate as to what the minimum level for minimal safe operating level, or not safe, you know, there is no, all that will happen is the grid will just trip and it will just, you know, there'll be a blackout. But there is some debate as to whether that level is, the minimum operating level is, you know, 600 megawatts, 700 megawatts or whatever it is. So essentially our grid wasn't designed to function at such a low load. And with solar producing most of its power during the day, particularly at midday, we have a problem which is colloquially known as the duck curve. So people wake up in the morning, they start having breakfast, all the appliances come on. So we have a small peak in the morning, and then everyone goes to school, goes to work, or is, you know, at home, and the solar comes on. And we have the bottom of the duck, but then when everyone comes home and especially when
there's the air conditioner on and you know, it gets the dinner cooking, yeah.
Exactly. When you have that overlap with the air conditioners, then you have another peak later in the evening.
From 3 p.m. till about 9 p.m. at night. So, yeah, we can move that. We can harvest that photovoltaic and wind during the day and then move that till later in the day, and that's going to be the way forward. So look, Peter, batteries are going to take a big part of this. Are you seeing batteries going into the microgrid systems that you're putting in place?
Look, I don't do much microgrids at this stage. It's a lot of commercial solar, residential solar, commercial grid electricity, but I am involved in that space somewhat. Yeah, look, Tesla has submitted an inquiry to the Australian federal government calling on 20 gigawatts of battery storage by 2040 to replace the gas peaking plants and coal-fired power stations. So there's definitely a need for storage. Look, you know, you could argue that EVs are just storage on wheels. They're a, you know, very flexible load, and they're very price sensitive. So they'll respond to price signals very well. And, you know, EVs are sitting around during the middle of the day, not doing much. So they could be sucking up all that, you know, excess solar energy.
Peter, they could actually, in fact, be being paid to take power off the grid when there's too much coming in.
Especially in the middle of the night when, you know, the wind farms are still producing power and, you know, we have instances of negative wholesale electricity prices. So, yeah, absolutely. But look, there's definitely, you know, the battery space is, you know, really, you know, network operators around the world have suffered, you know, with the advances in technology and, you know, distributed energy have you know, suffered from what it's called a network operator death spiral. So, you know, as more solar comes on, you have less money to fund the infrastructure. So what you do is you increase prices. That incentivizes more solar. So then you try and put in prices up.
Smarter grids, and, you know, we need to, the more electric vehicles there are plugged into the grid on a timely fashion, the better. So look, Peter, there's so much to talk about. I'd like to get you back again to talk about Bitcoin at some time in the future, but we've run out of time for today. So thanks for coming in and really updating us. It's a good update on what's happening in the electric vehicle market, especially here in Western Australia. So thanks once again.
Thanks, Peter. Great to be with you, and thanks for having me back again.